Welcome to Ag Matters, covering positive agriculture stories from across Alaska on Big Cabbage Radio.
All right, folks, welcome to Ag Matters Radio here, or Ag Matters on Big Cabbage Radio. We've got an on-location program for you today. It's pretty special. We're here in Chiloquin, Oregon, and we're here with a guy I kind of know a little bit. You could say that he's my dad. We got Kerry Buse on the line with us today. Kerry, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And he is a talkative guy. He's super excited to be on the program today. He's not a man of many words, so we're gonna get it out of him today. But, well, we know you're in Chiloquin, Oregon right now, but tell us a little bit about, well, you raised me in Alaska, so tell us about that.
Yeah, I hired on with the FAA, Federal Aviation Administration, an air traffic controller years ago back in the late 80s. And when I was at the academy, they started offering me positions, places, and it was like Seattle and New York and Chicago. And I just kept saying no, no, no. And finally they said, well, we have a place in Kenai, Alaska. And I said, I'll take it. So we lived there for what? I think about 15 years. And then we take a job in Salt Lake City for a while, but then we ended up for, I think Cody went all his high school years in Wasilla area.
Yep. So in that time, living in Soldotna, I think this being Ag Matters program, talk to us about it. It doesn't exist any longer, but Echo Lake Feed, what can you tell us about that venture?
Yeah, well, we bought that. It was just a piece of land that had, I think it was 7 acres, and the house and the feeds are all combined. And yeah, we did that for, I think, 3 or 4 years, enjoyed it a lot. We shipped a lot of hay in, compressed hay, and then just sold different feeds and sold some of the feed from up in the Delta way. But, yeah, we enjoyed that.
Yeah, if I'm correct, that would have been the Dennis Green outfit, which still exists up there today. And I know they deliver to a lot of different parts of the state. So shipping in hay, that's pretty common for a lot of the feed stores up there. What do you see as some of the, I don't want to say disadvantages or maybe challenges when it comes to making forage up in Alaska? You've seen different parts of that production.
Well, it's just such a finicky growing season. You can't really grow alfalfa up there because of the weather. But then when you go to put up hay and stuff with so much rain and moisture, it's just really hard. I know a lot of the guys will put it up as like silage hay and wrap it because then they don't have to worry about it getting dried enough to bale it. So it's just always a challenge growing the grass and different kinds of stuff up there.
Right. And I think, from 15, 20 years ago, were people doing haylage silage, or is that more of a recent thing that you've seen?
No, that's more of a recent thing. I think because of the need of it, I don't know what the right word is, but because it works better, I think people have learned to do that more.
Yeah, I guess that's my observation too. I just wasn't sure. My memory sometimes isn't as good being the younger kid at that time. Well, we're actually, the weather's been very Alaskan since we got here to Chiloquin, which I guess isn't that normal, but we've been getting lots of snow and talking about unusual growing seasons. My favorite memories are probably growing up at the feed store. Of course, we weren't there for a long time, but, you know, boarding horses, raising pigs, getting the chicks in and all that kind of stuff. There's something about a feed store even to this day that makes me feel at home and just really comfortable. A lot of good memories there. Was it, as far as the stuff coming from Delta, what was the local stuff that you were receiving?
Well, we got some hay from there, not very much. A lot of our straw, well, all of our straw came from there. But then Dennis at the time, I don't know what he does now or who's up there now, but it had barley and a few other things in it. It was just a general feed pellet, but it worked pretty good for both horses and cows, and some people even fed it to pigs and chickens. So we sold a lot of that. He would bring it down a whole truckload at a time, I don't know what it holds, 15 ton at a time or something.
Right. And well, that makes me think of too, you're talking about straw. The Iditarod is wrapped up. We're congratulating Ryan Reddington. It's really exciting to have the kind of the first family of the Iditarod have that kind of mark on the race. And so proud of them. But straw is a big deal. What can you tell us about straw, the Iditarod, or just mushers in general?
Well, back in the day, you know, they go through a lot of straw. A lot of those kennels have 40 to 80, 100 dogs. And I know, I mean, this is dating back a ways, but I know we sponsored at the feed store, we sponsored Tim Osmar and several different people. So we provided them with their straw for the year. And they would go through quite a bit. And you know, even at the Iditarod, they'd have to haul it to the different places. But just for the dog kennels in general through the winter, straw is a big part of what people needed. Yeah, not to insult any of our listeners' intelligence. You know, there's a big difference between hay and straw. Straw is just really used for bedding for, you know, it has multiple purposes, but bedding is for animals is of course, a big one. And then hay is for forage or for eating. So, and I think, what do you know what our straw comes from as far as what type of plant it's being harvested from up there in Alaska?
I think most of the straw I got was actually barley straw. So it was from the barley plant. You know, if you see that, it's similar looking to wheat. And so it ends up with a big stem. And so that's what the straw came from. Most of the straw there, a lot of the straw down here is more out of wheat or rye.
So yeah, it's kind of a, maybe considered a byproduct. So you have your main product, which is the grain of whatever it is. And then the straw is just kind of, go in and cut that and bale it up, and then you've got some straw. Well, folks, if you're just joining us, this is your host, Cody Buse, for Ag Matters. And we have on the line, we're here on location in Chiloquin, Oregon, with my dad, Kerry Buse, who has a long history in Alaska. And we talked about Echo Lake Feed, if you know that, down in Soldotna. It's changed hands a lot, and it's no longer there. There still is Echo Lake Lockers, which we always recommend, and that's where, if you're familiar with Kenai dip, that's truly where it originates. So if you go to Cars or Safeway and grab Kenai dip, you know that it came from Echo Lake Locker a long time ago. So that's something we always enjoy as a family. I want to dive back into your past a little bit. You grew up in I don't want to say the Tri-Cities because it's north of the Tri-Cities in Washington, what we call, I would consider the eastern Washington, but the dry side of Washington. A lot of people, you know, think of Washington as evergreen state, which is true, but, you know, the western side has a lot of dry land farming, irrigated farming, and is a big producer of all kinds of agricultural products. So that's where you grew up, Kerry, and I kind of wanted to focus in on an FFA project. So FFA members, for as long as I've known, have what they call a supervised agricultural experience, and it can be all kinds of things. It could be a service project, but you know, some of the really neat ones I think can be diving into entrepreneurial projects. And I've always found it fascinating. If you need to know something about rabbits, Kerry's a good person to talk to. So, if you wouldn't mind, you can tell us about your project there that you had.
Well, when I was 15 or 16, sophomore year of high school, I got interested in rabbits, and so my dad helped me out a little bit, and we found some rabbits. Anyway, I converted an old potato cellar that we weren't using for potatoes anymore into a rabbit farm, and I did work release through school. And so anyway, at one time, I ended up developing it into the largest rabbit farm in the state of Washington. I had over 5,000 rabbits. So, and I sold them to I had a contract with Safeway. So Safeway it wasn't Safeway themselves, but they contracted with a guy to do all the butchering, and they would come once a week. I think it was on a Sunday. They'd come and pick up all my rabbits that were ready to go to market. So I'd sell 400 or 500 rabbits every week, live rabbits. He'd load them up and take them, and then they took it from there. But yeah, it was an interesting project. But then I was down to about 3,000 rabbits after doing that for 3 years, and Safeway canceled the contract. So then I was really scrambling because I had a lot of rabbits.
Yeah, I can't imagine. And that's, I guess, one of the dangers of being a producer can be those contracts and not really being ready for changes to that. And I know we've talked a lot on this program. It's maybe, do you think it was easier then to get into some of the bigger chain stores than it is today? Or do you have any thoughts on that?
I really don't know. You know, with rabbit, the problem was rabbits started being thought, you know, they're a great meat animal, but they started being thought more of as a pet and that. And so Safeway just quit. The reason they canceled the contract, they just quit selling rabbit meat. And so, you know, I think it's pretty hard to get in with the main chains today. But back then, you know, it wasn't too hard. But the problem was they just canceled selling that meat.
So from your perspective, was it something that they realized, or was it over time more people ate less rabbit or thought them more as pets? I guess I've always grown up with knowing that rabbits could be meat, but, you know, kind of as a pet in my head. So is that a generational thing?
I think so. And that's why you don't see commercial rabbit operations much anymore, because there's just not a big market for it. I think there's a lot, at least around this area, and I know there was in Alaska, a lot of people raise them for themselves because it's a very efficient way of providing meat for your family. But as far as commercially, they're just thought of more as pets, and people, it's hard to find a market to sell them commercially.
Right. What can you tell us about the qualities of rabbit meat?
Well, one of the main things, rabbit meat is all white meat. It's less cholesterol and fat than chicken. It's very lean, high in protein. So it's just a really healthy meat, you know, a lot less calories and things like that. There is one danger. If you'd eat just rabbit meat and that's all, it actually can be too high in protein. So there's actually, I can't think of what it's called, but there's actually an illness you can get. So it's a really good meat, but just not, you know, you wouldn't want to eat it six nights a week forever because then it would cause a little bit of problem. But I've always thought rabbit meat tasted a lot like white chicken meat, and it's very good and very healthy.
Right. I think maybe in survival situations, if all you could get was rabbit, I think some of us have heard that fact or something like that. But realistically, it's a very healthy meat. It's part of a balanced diet anyway. And no matter if I ate red meat every night of the week, it'd probably be an issue too. So yeah, a little bit different than red meat. But speaking of, you know, I'm thinking of cattle. This fact is something you've always shared, and I've always found it really interesting. But what can you tell us about, you know, the reproductive rate and the amount of meat you can get from, you know, cattle versus rabbits?
Well, from a simple perspective, you know, the gestation period on rabbit is somewhere between 28 and 31 days, and they're very, it's very like clockwork. It's always within those days. And one doe can have, because you wean it about 4 weeks, and then you can usually butcher it about 8 or 9 weeks. So one doe can have up to 7 or 8 litters a day, or a day, a year. And so she's going to average about 7 or 8 babies. So if you think about it, a cow produces its weight, if you're lucky, one time a year, where a rabbit reproduces her weight 50, 60 times a year. So as far as efficiency and the growth rate on rabbit per pound of food eaten is very high. So it's a very efficient way to have meat. And it's pretty amazing that, you know, you can get as much meat from one doe as you can.
Right. So if you get nothing from the program today, I want you to think about how just the one doe reproducing can produce about as much meat as a mama cow can in a year. So yeah, the meats aren't exactly comparable, but they're still a really nice protein, but pretty amazing that they can do that within a year. And you talked about that feed conversion just off the top of your head, or even just a guess. We can have people verify it later, but what is it with pigs? Do you know, is it 5-to-1 or?
I'm not sure on this. It's been a while, but pigs are pretty efficient. I think they're, and of course it depends on what you're feeding them, but good feed, I think they can gain a pound for about 3.5 to 4 pounds of feed. But a rabbit can gain a pound to about 2.5 to 2.75 pounds of food. And I think a cow is more like 5 or 6 or even higher. So yeah, it's pretty efficient, you know, growth rate and pretty cheap to feed just because you're not having to feed that much to get the weight.
Right. So pigs have a monogastric stomach, so that's pretty much the same stomach as a human. And so they've got to have some of those similar foods really in a lot of ways. But a rabbit, it's not taking food away from us either. But like you said, it's very efficient in that conversion where everybody's looking for the feed conversion, whether it's 2-to-1, 3-to-1, 4-to-1 or whatever it is. But rabbits are definitely down there in the lower portion of that. So very good feed converters for sure. As far as rabbits go, I'm just thinking, I don't know what I don't know. What is there anything else we haven't really covered when it comes to rabbits that maybe you think people would be interested in?
Not really. I mean, you know, it's just like I said, it's very healthy meat. It's a good meat. They're fun to raise as far as that goes. And you can, you know, there's also the pelt. You can do things. A lot of people like to raise the white, the like the California or the New Zealand white, because it's a white pelt, and then you can color them and sell them, you know, do all kinds of different things with them. So a rabbit is an interesting animal just in the fact that there's a lot of things you can do with just that one little animal.
Right. And just for, I don't know, curiosity's sake, I know you've got some animals right now, and with your history of growing up with horses and doing all things with horses, boarding horses, and currently having horses, I know that's not the only animal you have, but it's always fun to hear from someone who's really experienced and maybe tell us the good, the bad, and the ugly about raising any type of animal.
Yeah, well, the bad is it snowed all day yesterday, and the horses are starting to shed thinking it's getting warm, and so we had to blanket them last night because after getting wet, they were down, it was down to like 15 degrees. So, you know, the bad is you're always having to take care of those animals. The good is you're always having to take care of those animals, and if you love it, it's a fun, great thing. But, you know, they just provide a lot of joy and happiness. My wife and I love to ride, and we go riding all over our area. We border a bunch of national forest land. But we also, one of the things we do here is we have some longhorn cows. It's been kind of fun.
Yeah, folks, if you're just joining us, this is your host, Cody Buse, for Ag Matters on Big Cabbage Radio. We're on location today in Chiloquin, Oregon, talking with my father, Kerry Buse, who has a long history of agriculture in Alaska and just all over agriculture in general growing up. Well, talking about horses, I know that a lot of the forage grown in Alaska, I don't know if there's percentages, I'd have to see if that's even available, but it does. It goes to horses, and a lot of the feed that gets shipped up goes to horses. What can you tell us about their special nutrition requirements? Because they are a lot different than the cow, and it's not something that I completely understand that I think maybe you could give us some information about.
Well, you know, horses, there's different opinions out there on what horses can eat, but really horses can maintain themselves fairly well out on pasture. You do have to worry about, you know, in the spring, grass is too sweet, so you can't just put them out instantly. They can founder or have some issues because it's just too much sugar. But on average, horses do pretty good with just a forage feed, you know, a hay, a quality alfalfa or grass. There's several different kinds of orchard grass or timothy grass or brome grass that horses do well on. And then all we do in addition to that is supplement with a salt block or a down here we're deficient in selenium. So we do a selenium salt block so that they get that extra selenium. But each area is a little bit different. But the horse is really pretty easy to maintain and keep healthy as long as they're just, you know, they're a forager. So as long as they've got good forage, they can do pretty well.
Right, and sometimes I think, and of all the forages that you mentioned, it seems like brome and timothy are about the only ones that we can successfully do. I mean, I know you can, I've heard this before, you can grow alfalfa, but it's not going to come back next year. It's going to be very expensive. It's just not worth it. At least I've never seen a producer in Alaska that's growing alfalfa commercially. But yeah, brome and timothy, and you brought up a great point. I think all Western states, and maybe this is worldwide, but you do have to be aware of mineral deficiencies that might, you know, and if it's a cow, you got to still be aware of that because you want these things to be efficient, and that could be a very limiting factor or a problem for them. So that supplementation sounds, and you know, in Alaska, we have a very limited growing season, so it can be difficult to pasture because it's only going to be there for a couple months, and then it's going to really decline pretty fast, you know. So as far as your perspective as a feed store owner and a horse owner in Alaska at that time, did you see any problems with the hay, the good, the bad, and the ugly again?
No, there was actually some pretty good quality brome or a little bit of timothy. You mentioned alfalfa, but you're right. The problem with alfalfa up there, you could grow it if you get a good year, but it doesn't survive that kind of winter, so it'll kill off, and it's just not practical, you know, to replant every year. So that's why, as far as I know, alfalfa's never been successful in Alaska. But yeah, the grass up there is not bad. The big challenge is putting it into hay, is getting it dried out enough to where you can bale it, you know, because obviously if you bale it with too much moisture, and it's going to mold and have problems. So, but quality wise, it's a little lower in protein, but it's enough to where horses can do okay on it. But like you said, we did ship up a lot of alfalfa and different things up, but to make it effective, you have to compress it. So it gets pretty pricey.
If you're thinking about it, we talk about an animal nutrition, dry matter, you know, so a dry hay, it's going to, versus something that has water. And I think about eating celery versus maybe dehydrated celery. I don't know. I'm not getting very good analogies, but yeah, as far as I know, I'm not aware of the ins and outs of feeding haylage or silage to a horse. And again, I want to hit on just a little bit, you know, it has a very different stomach than a cow. Cows and goats and sheep and a lot of other animals are ruminants, four-chambered stomach. I can't even remember much about the horse stomach. I just know it's kind of unique in its way to still be able to process forages like that. But any thoughts on that as far as dry matter versus the haylage, or any thoughts at all? And
well, I'm not an expert on this, but haylage is a silage type stuff. It doesn't really work for horses. Horses have a very sensitive stomach, and so it's just like you can't feed them a lot of a sweet grain, you know, like a sweet wet cob or something like that. They just, it'll cause them to colic, which basically just means they get very upset stomach, and they can get their stomach twisted up, and colic is the leading killer of horses. So really, a horse mainly just needs good, dry, full, or, you know, hay matter to eat. And it can vary. I have a lot. I know a lot of people want to just feed alfalfa, where other people say never feed alfalfa. My experience is, as long as you're feeding a quality feed, a good dry matter feed, they'll do fine on any of it.
Yeah, and just for reference, I'll see if I can get this right. Wet cob would be corn, oats, and barley. Am I doing that right? With the wet part would be the molasses.
Yeah, yeah, and it's just, you know, and it's a good snack for them. It's a good supplement, but it's not something you want to feed a lot of. Their stomach just can't handle it.
Well, folks, we're getting towards the end of our program. This is your host, Cody Buse, for Ag Matters on Big Cabbage Radio. We've got just a minute or two left here. I always like to get people's thoughts on a couple of things, so maybe you could address this. Is number one, do you have a favorite Alaska-grown product? Or something that was, anyway, mine's rhubarb. But, and then any thoughts on Alaska agriculture in general? Just, you know, the opportunities, the challenges, the setbacks, anything and everything that you have a thought on. It's always nice to get different perspectives of people who've been in the industry and really seen it.
You know, I don't have particularly a favorite Alaska-grown product. You mentioned rhubarb. I do love rhubarb, and I love, you know, the kind of cabbages and things that can be grown up there. As far as the challenges, you know, I've always said agriculture, in my mind, should be a bigger part of Alaska than it is. I'm not sure of all the challenges as far as, you know, getting land and things like that. I think the price, the cost of it, and making it effective is one of the biggest challenges. But I would love to see ag be, whether it's animal ag or crop growing ag, I'd love to see it be a bigger part of Alaska. Because I just think it's more, it could be done more up there than what it's being done, I think.
Yeah, and just in the time that we've been here, thinking about the infrastructure that exists here and some of the supports, whether that's, you know, sometimes we see inspection as a negative, but I mean, really, when an industry has that type of support, just like mining, oil and gas production, anything else, you know, it needs infrastructure to be able to really thrive and go forward. So anyway, that's just a thought I had too. It was super fun to reminisce today and think about the old feed store days, think about the animals that we raised and the things that we did. And it's always good to spend time together also. So thank you, Dad, for being on the program today, and look forward to listening to this again, and got a lot of good, solid advice. We covered a lot of different topics, so appreciate you being on the program today.
Oh, you're welcome. It was fun. Just a side note, we're actually on our way to pick up some chicks with the granddaughter so that they can pick out the chick and name them, so that'll be fun.
Yeah, this is going to be a big year for chick with the egg prices going up, and, you know, anytime there's any type of volatility in the market, chicks just sales go crazy. Same with garden and different stuff. So get on to your local producers. Yeah, you can do mail order too, but there's got a lot of folks that'll be selling chicks here as we come on spring. So thanks again for being on the program, and we appreciate you.
You've been listening to Ag Matters, covering positive agriculture stories from across Alaska. Ag Matters is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. For more information about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.